Raising a Teenager. Well, you've survived the first decade, plus a couple of years, and you're on to raising a teenager. Let's look at some of the challenges and some of the solutions also involved in raising adolescents. Challenges first. You know, at this age, children are sometimes taller than their parents. And especially if you have a young man and his little mom, sometimes she's looking way up there to tell him, "Now you go to bed right now." A teenager is a child-adult creature and has characteristics of both age sets. You know, as a child, the teenager is still very inexperienced, just hasn't lived long enough to know that how the world works exactly, to know that people out there cannot always be trusted or, you know, they just haven't had enough trouble yet, you know, with anything, with the law, with relationships and all kinds of things, to know what can go wrong. And their 35, 45, 55 year old parents, you know, have been through it all and so much want to share. But kids have to go through their own journeys. This quality, however, of inexperience combined with idealism, naivety, is kind of a dangerous package and causes parents to worry. I've seen many teenagers, you know, 18-year-old beautiful girls walking around 3 in the morning in their suburban neighborhoods or through a park on the way home, saying things to their mom like, "Oh, it's okay. I've done it so many times before. There's nobody there. It's completely safe, Mom. It's completely safe. Don't worry." Meanwhile, the mom in her, you know, room at home, shaking and you know, so struck with anxiety and terror, because she and the mom knows what can go wrong there. But the teenager doesn't yet really get it, and has another quality, which is a sense of invincibility, like nothing can happen to me. So you combine naivety, inexperience with invincibility, and it's really a scary dynamic there, because the child just feels like, "Oh, I can drive really fast and, you know, I'll be fine. I'll never crash into anything." Or, "I can have a little bit of alcohol. I mean, I can control myself and drive, and the whole name of the game is just don't get caught." Or, "I can even do things that are slightly illegal or very illegal, you know, and I'll never get caught. It's okay." You know, this sense of nothing can happen to me and everything will be fine, you know. It's really scary to watch for parents. Another characteristic of teenagers is egocentricity, which means they're into themselves, kind of like the 2-year-old stage. It's all about me. And the child is self-focused, you know, what's coming my way, what are people doing for me, you know, I'm safe, so why are you worried, you know I'm at the party and it's 4 a.m., but I know where I am, so why are you in bed worrying about this, you know, so the kind of an inability to empathize fully. And then we have this state of emerging into the world that's accompanied by a strong sense of curiosity. So what will this substance be like to try? Or what will this activity be like to do? Just, you know, I'm growing up now. I'm becoming free of my parents and able to experiment and do new things. And I want to know all about it. And teenagers are often experimenting not just with activities, but even with lifestyles. Children change, you know, sometimes temporarily during these years, what they were like when they were a child. And I say temporarily because they often come back to their childhood roots. A child who was, you know, very careful about his observance of his religion, all of a sudden throws off everything and doesn't seem to care. Saying sometimes, "Oh yeah, you know, when I get married, I'll do it again," you know. And this is actually true in many cases, but the experimental stage, the "let me try it on, let me see what it feels like" stage, can be so distressing and so alarming to parents. So these are some of the challenges, and not all of them, but just some of the characteristics of a teenager. And you can imagine if you add some other characteristics that the child is carrying in his genes to this mixture. Let's say attention deficit disorder, for example. Now, one of the things I forgot to mention was in the normal challenges, teenagers are impulsive. You know, let's go to the party now. Let's throw beer cans over here now and, you know, let's just do it. And this not thinking ahead too far trait is in the average teenager. But let's say we look at a child who has ADD and turns 14 or 15 or 16. His attention deficit disorder has its own set of lack of planning, sometimes lack of foreseeing consequences, intense impulsivity, poor judgment, things like that. And you add that to the normal amount of egocentricity, invincibility, naivety, impulsivity, curiosity, and whoa, a lot of times teenagers with attention deficit disorder will get into extra amounts of trouble with the school or with the law or with their parents or with all three because of that added mixture. And there's other things too. Well, let's look at some of the issues that the teenagers themselves have to deal with. Now, instead of just looking at the characteristics, what is the teenager dealing with? Well, she's got the issue of the changing body, the changing self-image, and what's that doing to her? Well, and I say her, but no, I don't mean just her. I mean boys as well, because now kids are extremely self-conscious and need to look right, and there's so much peer pressure going on with this for them that the competition is intense, and they want to, they want to grow into a certain appearance that they can't all have that. In other words, they want to be beautiful and handsome, and, you know, some of them will be very striking looking, and some of them will be a little bit underweight, a little bit overweight, a little bit short, a little bit tall, bad skin during these years, all kinds of issues of hair that won't come under control, you know, frizzy hair and lack of development or too much development of the body, and, you know, at the various ages and stages. And the kids, you know, are just dealing with trying to be comfortable in their own skin. And more often than not, even if they are, to us, objectively beautiful, to themselves, they may develop body image issues, you know, just feeling either obsessed with their body, you know, intending to it all day long in a million different ways, or disgusted by their bodies, or frightened by their bodies, and all of that. So that's something that they are dealing with. They have social pressures in terms of fitting in with their friends, having friends, not having friends, the whole thing with cliques and groups. Having best friends, having parties to go to, places to socialize, this becomes an intense pressure, especially for the kids who are on the introverted side, the ones who only had one or two good friends, or maybe less than that even, through elementary school. And now, in the higher grades, where the social scene becomes even more important, these kids can be in a lot of pain, like psychic pain, through this decade, because if they can't fit in where they want to, where they want to see themselves, they can get very, very isolated, depressed, lonely, upset, and they don't all fit in. Okay, like there's always the stragglers, the ones, not just stragglers, but in fact, you know, there's always an in-group, and that in-group is pretty small. And then there's the out-group, which is very large. So I'd say that more people than not have issues with friends during the adolescent stage. And it's very important for kids to find one or two, at least, good friends to hang around with and to talk to. And some kids don't manage that either. So anyways, there's that issue for them. And then, you know, there's also the issue of kids who are swamped by social obligations, kind of, because, you know, they are popular and they're having trouble managing their friend scene. And they get hurt, or there's gossiping, or there's bad feelings going around, or there's just too much demand on their time, and their academics are suffering. And that's another one of their pressures. You know, they are trying to do well in school. Some of them have particular ambitions for, you know, the post-high school years. And they have that pressure going on to succeed. There's always a test at school. Do you remember what it was like, you know, having a test every day or every couple of days and just having to study and having to perform and having to look at that mark and get it back when, you know, when you get it back? It's just hard. It's a stage of life that we never want to go back to. Like, you know, in adulthood, there are sometimes examinations that we have to take and courses that we have to study for. But they're not like all day, every day for most of us, and that we're going to be tested so frequently, and nobody wants to go back to that. So it's not fun for teenagers. It's a lot of pressure, and some of the kids who take it very, very seriously can actually come under a great deal of mental strain. There's the issue with developing, we said, body awareness, but also specifically sexuality and trying to find themselves as a young man and a young woman, trying to, you know, I mean, they're looking forward, you know, to young marriages very often, which is great, but till they get there, they have this energy, this curiosity, this emerging identity that they're all trying to put all that together. So that's one of the issues for them. And then there's the drugs and alcohol concerns of this group. Always, there's alcohol, and I'll say, in every adolescent's life somewhere, if just on holidays like, you know, Purim and Simchas Torah and various things, there's going to be alcohol as part of their lives. But more than, you know, just those two occasions, there's always a celebration somewhere, and alcohol being served. And kids are learning now that they can drink and that they can experience an intoxicated state and they can recover from that intoxicated state for the most part. And then some of them don't do so well in that intoxicated state, but they don't find that out until they experiment. So parents, have to stand by and know that this is going on with their kids. Sometimes there's drug experimentation as well. And, of course, kids get into all kinds of trouble, you know, health-wise, with the law, with the schools, with the parents, with everybody. Or they manage not to, but this is an issue for them, you know, what to do and how to handle exposure to these things when they come up. Now, there's also a lot of emerging mental health issues in the adolescent years. So children who were kind of fetchy and miserable in the first 10 years may find themselves facing depression in the adolescent years, because and still with miserable mood or anger and irritability as a predominant feature, because it's not really till adulthood that depression takes on a predominantly sad flavor. Before that, in childhood and adolescence, there's more of an irritable flavor, but in adolescence we're getting some of that morose quality as well, and that I don't want to live kind of feeling. And in fact, suicide is a serious issue among this age group. Within this age group, the suicide rate is fairly high for teenagers, and that's because they don't have the foresight yet to know about, you know, just like they don't know about all the things that can go wrong in the world, they also don't know yet about all the things that can go right and how we can survive and how things can straighten out. So when they get depressed, they sometimes fall into a huge pit of darkness. And during the adolescent years, little symptoms of anxiety that were present in the earlier years now can come into a full-blown anxiety disorder. Obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, often shows up during these years. And eating disorders of all kinds, including the overeating, obesity type orders, the disorders, the anorexic and bulimic disorders. These are just some of the things. There's also psychosis, of course, that emerges in the late teens, and disorders of such as schizophrenia. And so it's a time that kind of, because of all the pressures on a child, if they have a genetic vulnerability to any of these mental health disorders, it's a time that they could easily get triggered. Now, what is a parent to do? we want our kids to be safe, and we want them to be healthy. And we want them to leave our houses, around age 20 or so, give or take a couple of years, having a lot of skills to negotiate adult life with. We want them to know how to take care of themselves by the time they leave home, how to express themselves in healthy ways so that they can enjoy healthy relationships when they leave home, as they go off into their own marriages and raise their own kids. We want them to know how to manage their anger by the time they leave our home, and to manage their stress by the time they leave our home. Now, this is a tall order because, you know, many of us at age 30, 40, or 50 are still learning these things, but I'm just putting out the goals there for us to consider, that we would like them to know how to take care of themselves physically and emotionally, and to be responsible with their time, with their money, to be able to just run a functional adult life. So we're going to want to expose them to all kinds of things during this decade that will get them ready for that. Give them money to manage, for example, before the issues are very serious. So we want to have them have an allowance that, or a bigger allowance, or have a job or something where they can actually go and pay for their clothes and pay for their toiletries and manage a budget and pay for their entertainment and everything, so that they can see, hey, you run out of money sometimes, and what do you do then? And do you borrow? Do you get into debt? Do you steal? You know, like, what are the solutions, right? So you want them to learn these things while they're still in the adolescent years. And hopefully, you know, you're training them to get out of bed on time and do their homework and all these things, so that they will have a sense of a work ethic and a functioning ethic that they can take into their higher levels of learning or into their jobs, wherever they're going. So, and I guess if we were to sum up our goals, we're trying to raise somebody who can leave home at 20 and do a fairly good job of starting his or her life. What are our strategies? Well, the most important strategy you're going to have with your teenager is your relationship with the teenager. Because if the child feels close to you, then when they're having challenges with their friends, with their mood, with their school, with whatever's going on, they'll actually be able to turn to you. And if you alienate your kids with a lot of negativity, then you'll be the last one to hear of what's really going on with them. And it may not be in a pleasant context by the time you hear of it. So, you know, you want that door to be open. This is a period where you're going to need to reduce your criticism, reduce your threats of punishments and your punishments. If you listen to earlier lectures here, you learned something about the 80-20 rule with raising children, to be 80% good feeling to them, and 20% could include your corrections, your instructions, your discipline, and all kinds of things like that. This rule changes in the adolescent years and becomes the 90-10 rule, meaning 90%, 9 out of 10 of your sentences need to feel good to your teenager. There needs to be joking, laughter, interesting conversation about interesting topics, sympathy, empathy, understanding, treats and gifts and hugs and smiles, all kinds of positive, good-feeling interactions, and just a little bit of instruction, that would be in your 10%, a little bit of reprimand if you really need to use it, you know, and a little tiny bit of threats of consequences and actual consequences, that is discipline in the 2x rule type. Just a tiny bit of that with this age group, and that's going to really fade out after the child is 17 years old or so, because, you know, at that point, hopefully the child will have integrated that he can discipline himself, you know. Even in the adolescent years, even from 14, 15 years on, when you're actually designing a discipline that has a negative consequence to it, I would suggest involving the child so that it would go, you know, using the 2x rule, which is another lecture that you might want to go and revisit on positive discipline. So that rule, we might say to a kid who didn't call home, right? He stayed out and he was supposed to call home at 11 o'clock or 12 and forgot to repeatedly. So then we could say to the child, well, you know, I feel there needs to be a consequence for this. What do you think would be a reasonable consequence for failing to call home in the future? And at this age, surely, you know, children can help set up their own programs of discipline. But even then, that discipline needs to be a very small part of the communication with a teenager, because teenagers are more like adults. You don't want your spouse lecturing you and, you know, criticizing you, reprimanding you, threatening you, or punishing you. And your kid feels that way towards you in adolescence. But you still have to do a tiny bit of that, because they still have that child side to them, and you're still the parent. But just keep it minimal, and keep that 90% positive is your most important tool during this decade. Keep a relationship with your child. Keep the lines of communication open. And you want to also stay on top of the model that you are providing. So they need to see you functioning pretty well now. They need to see how you are handling the stresses in your personal life, in your relationship with your spouse. They need to see that you can show respect, that you can manage your anger, that you can get help if you need help. They're learning still, watching carefully. And this is a time not to scare them off from relationships. You know, they're going to enter the world of marriage soon themselves. And we don't want them entering that with, well, you know, I'm terrified to get married because I see the suffering my parents have, and boy, I don't want any of that. So, you know, you're going to continue to need to work on your own life in order to inspire your children to have confidence in their own futures. So that's a quick course, you know, and go ahead and have a lot of fun with your teenager, and just keep improving and growing every day. The whole family grows together and loves together, and just have, you know, a wonderful, successful decade with your teenager.